back to Untold, the podcast where we go behind the scenes and speak to founders and business leaders, thought provokers, everyone, about their untold stories. We want to get the exclusive behind the scenes and speak about the founders' experiences behind their businesses, as well as obviously the amazing growth stories and wicked supermarket listings. We are here to speak about the reality behind it. Today, I have a really exciting guest, someone I've been really looking forward to having on the podcast for a while. I've followed their journey for a while. Just before we were speaking off air, Chloe, who heads up marketing at The Savorist, was raving about their products. So I know this is going to be a really good episode. It's Shagan from The Gym Kitchen. How are you doing, mate?
I'm good, thank you. Absolute pleasure to be here, man.
Oh, man, it's wicked to have you on. I'm loving the process of this, and it's class for us.
Thank you,
man. Chat.
Thank you.
The way that I love to start these things, or I think works really well, is to bring listeners up to date with you and The Gym Kitchen, the brand, how you went about starting it, background on yourself, career, and sort of life to date, really, so that then when we have these conversations later on, our listeners know exactly where it's come from.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess I can kick off then. So I actually grew up in East London, a place called Forest Gate, which is close to Stratford.
Yeah.
So not a lot of people know where Forest Gate is. And right now it's got coffee shops and it's, you know, it's buzzing and everybody wants to live there. But back then when I grew up, nobody really wanted to live there. Gangs, gun crime, knife crime, all sorts of stuff. But the great thing was I managed to get out of that area and I managed to go to university in Surrey. So the University of Surrey. And whilst you're almost like at the University of Surrey, they almost like encourage you to do placement years. So obviously I had no idea what FMCG was.
Yeah.
Had no idea, you know, you could be an account manager, you can be this, you can be that. I did a placement year at a company called Coty, which they own Adidas body spray, deodorants, skincare, like David Beckham body spray as well. Yeah. And I just loved it. And I was like, wow, this world exists in fast moving consumer goods, but obviously on the beauty side. So that kind of almost, I finished uni, got a first class degree in business management, which I'm still super proud of.
Yeah.
But then I went straight back into work at Coty. They took me back straight away. They were like, this is great. We love him. And there I just started a career within FMCG. So I was already in the FMCG world. I worked at companies like Revlon, Cal Brands, who owned John Frieda Haircare.
Yeah.
Loads of different brands like that. And then I went into food and drink at a point. I went to go and work for a company called Up and Go, which is an Australian breakfast drink. And at the time, they didn't have any distribution in the UK. And it was all about, you know, kind of launching in here. They're massive in Australia, but no distribution here. And we just had such a great time, such a buzz. And that's what kind of gave me that startup lifestyle buzz.
Yeah.
So obviously, being in FMCG, you kind of spot trends and gaps and you kind of, you're closer to the ground. So I was a frustrated gym goer. In 2016, I trademarked this brand name called The Gym Kitchen, not necessarily knowing what I wanted to do with it at the time, but just because I was like, well, it's a great name. Maybe I'll do snacking. Maybe I'll do something, when I started seeing like the rise in sports nutrition, you know, Grenade out there making loads of different noises. You started to see the rise in meal prep and scratch cooking and people doing this at home themselves.
Yeah.
And then like all the quick serve restaurants were starting to pop up, you know, like Pret, Leon, etc.
Yeah.
And for me, I went, okay, these three categories are great, but where's that same translation within the ready meals fixture?
Yeah. And
I told my business partner at the time, I was like, I want to launch probably like something like beef jerky or something along those lines. But there was a day I was outside the supermarket after a gym session. And I was just like, actually, this probably isn't right. And validated that with my business partner, but then also validated that with some customers by standing outside store and just trying to understand, okay, so what do you do when you finish in the gym or you're just trying to eat healthy? Where do you get food from?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, we order from some website, which isn't inconvenient, or we make our food ourselves, which is also inconvenient.
Yeah.
So I was like, surely in this big category, there's an opportunity to create something that's better for you, that's tasty, that's affordable, and obviously nutritious and delicious. So yeah, kind of just went on that long journey from then in.
Amazing.
Yeah, trying to create Amazing. What is The Gym Kitchen today, man.
I love it, I love it. And I think it's also like what a story, and what a something that really stuck out with me was when you said that like didn't know that FMCG exists and as a channel. And I think that is like we also gloss over it because obviously we're all in FMCG, so we just talk about it. But it's amazing when you go like pre-FMCG, you go into like a Sainsbury's, a Tesco's, wherever you do your shopping, and pick up something off a shelf and don't even think about how it got to that shelf.
100%.
Mad,
isn't it? It's literally crazy. And now, whenever there's a gap on shelf, I'm like, oh, the poor account manager.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, bless him. I know there's something going on there that has caused this to happen. Do you know
there's
what I mean?
Some brands that I'll go and help out and get the store.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. That's it. So you know because you've been through half of those things that obviously happen in store as well. So
yeah,
but I do think that there's so much more that the industry does need to do to almost highlight to like schools, colleges, particularly in a diverse environment anyway.
Because
for me, you know, I didn't know you could be an account manager, but there's also other roles within FMCG, IT, tech. Like there's so much stuff that, that can actually be taught. And it's just how you do it, I guess.
Yeah. Amazing, man. I think it's so cool. So that you validate the gym kitchen, you validate what you want to do from it. Take us from there then to sort of going into production and your first sale. Like we had a really like interesting chat pre hit and record about Asda and that being your first customer.
I mean, yeah.
That's pretty mad.
Yeah, no. So the thing about the gym kitchen was I didn't want to launch it as another direct-to-consumer kind of proposition first. And I also didn't have the smaller manufacturer to actually be able to go, okay, let's launch in some smaller retailers and then kind of build it. So it was almost like, well, you've got to get Asda or you've got to get a retailer or it's not going to happen. So as a result of that, I spent probably about 2 years. So trademarked it in 2016. 2018 is when I started really going around to the retailers because we'd worked with a good manufacturer on developing some recipes. But actually, let me take the story back a little bit. So how we found our manufacturer was, I am obviously working in FMCG, you know how to get a meeting with a retailer.
Yeah.
So I managed to get a meeting with Morrisons, right? Which was great. And I almost like pretended we had a manufacturer already set up and was like, I want to show you some stuff. So I managed to get like some kitchen samples, like mocked up, etc. Had this meeting with this guy, really nice guy. And he was like, at the end of the meeting, he was like, look, I love the proposition. And then I was like to him, do you have any manufacturing partners that you would recommend we go off and speak to?
Yeah.
And ever since then, I always go off of retailer manufacturer recommendations. And he goes to me, oh yes, actually go speak to these guys. So then I went and spoke to those guys. And obviously as a smaller, you know, kind of player with nothing really at the time, obviously my business partners had a business, which was great. So could use that as a bit of leverage to actually, we know what we're doing. It's not just, you know, me, little old me trying to rock up and try and create something. But then after a long time, I'd say like a good 3 or 4 months, they kind of bought into my vision. They could see that actually there is room for the gym kitchen because there isn't anything that's trying to do this.
Yeah.
And a lot of people actually really love the name. Mm-hmm. Just because it does exactly what it says it does on the tin, you know.
Yeah.
It's people recognize what gym is, they recognize what kitchen is, and you put them together and it's almost like bringing the gym home to your kitchen without actually having to go kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, so then I went round, did all this, the pitching to retailers. Obviously, I got loads of no's, as you do within this environment. But I think from where I grew up in my background, having no is it doesn't mean anything, you know. It's kind of like, all right, you keep on going because there are worse things that could happen to you.
Eventually
I managed to get a meeting with Asda, and it was great because the Asda buyer was also into health fitness, was a personal trainer.
Amazing.
And he just got it straight away.
He
was like, I love this, you know, let's do it, let's figure out how we can get it on shelves. And then we launched into Asda in January.
Yeah.
And but unfortunately 3 months later is when the whole world shut down. So you know, you go from launching a brand in 2020 off after working 2 years going around to every single retailer to then COVID happening and hitting the shelves. And at the time, everybody was over, the supply chains were overwhelmed. People buying toilet roll and chicken and all sorts of banana bread they were making.
It was crazy
to be honest. I was like, what are they doing with all that loo roll and banana?
So it's crazy,
isn't it? But then, so we had to come off shelf for, I want to say about a month. And that was really, really disheartening. But obviously you had to understand that they had to prioritize those categories that were flying out the window and simply didn't have the capacity to go, okay, let's focus on XYZ. And then slowly we got bought back in. But it was almost like a rebuilding job, because in January, you know, it's health, it's wellness, everybody's buzzing about it. They're like, we love this. Oh, thank you for bringing this out. Then we've got customers going, well, you know, where have you gone? Like, what's going on? And because it was only in a select amount of Asda stores, the customers are going to those stores to find your proposition.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're almost like, well, I'm not going to be able to get it anywhere else because we don't have direct to consumer. We don't have, you know, other channels. It's the only channel. So a really, really hard, tough time at that point, but glad to get back on shelf because they could see and believe that, you know, this is a brand that's going to grow. It's doing things differently.
Yeah.
We are focused on how we bring health to the forefront of the supermarket. And yeah, we managed to get back on and keep rocking from there.
Amazing, man. I think it's so cool. And I think one thing that really sticks out is how much power, but how influential buyers can be in the total business decision.
100%.
Like if you're Asda buyer being like, no, you didn't get it, that you've put yourself in the opportunity for him to see it, right? So it's all come from you. But like, it blows my fucking mind that they have so much power. And I'm like, like, it's the food chain. That's just how we have to operate. Yeah. We all know that's what needs to happen. But on the flip side, you go, there are sometimes some amazing stories as to how inspirational someone can be in that business. And whatever happens to your business, like the fact that you're like, he just got it. He was a personal trainer like that. I'm going to imagine he will stick in
100%
in your head forever.
100%. And he's actually the reason that we launched into some other categories as well. So, yeah. You know, he then moved across to manage Frozen, or Frozen came within to his remit too. And he, you know, he managed to do that. And the thing is, you know, it's almost a partnership.
Yeah.
We're doing it together.
I love that.
They could see that there was a gap. We came in and we could fill the gap. It just took somebody to know and understand.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah.
It's been on a great journey.
I
love
it. And I think every brand, if you were to like nail in on and dial down into like influential buyers, everyone would have their influence.
Yeah, yeah. Because someone's got to give you your first break into retail, right?
It's amazing. Yeah.
You know, you think back to all, you know, even like Coca-Cola, for instance, like there would have been someone that would have given Coca-Cola the first break to get into a supermarket, right? It's crazy when you think about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But
and
it's
also,
the truth.
Can you imagine like pitching Coke when no one knows what Coke is?
It's crazy, isn't it?
It's so hard.
Here's a sugary drink.
Yeah, yeah.
Like this. Yeah.
Here's this. It looks disgusting, but tastes really good.
Yeah, but tastes really good. Yeah, exactly.
Like I know for us at Savorous, it's Chloe Lerner, who's the Donata buyer, and she puts on EasyJet. And that for us was that like similar moment where you're like, okay, you've really given us a pop here, a crack to go. At The Savorous, we can't run our own podcast and not talk about our wonderful snacks. We have a range of crunchits, which are made from edamame, black bean, puff rice. They're bundled together and seasoned with Thai chili or sizzling barbecue. They pack a punch of crunch and are honestly the go-to snack that you should be heading for in your cupboard. They're high protein, they're low calorie, and our mission is to end the healthy, tasty tension. It says it all, really. Healthy snacks that taste absolutely banging. Head on over to our website and grab some. Ta-da. As you know, and as our listeners know at Untold, I want to uncover some of the personal challenges that you've had through the business. And that is more to give our listeners a element of Shaking at the Gym Kitchen is killing it, right? You went into Asda, you've got some really good distribution now, but you have obviously been through some harder times, right? And I want to give our listeners who are maybe going through some harder times right now, they look at you and go, well, I aspire to be like you one day, and I aspire for my brand to be like the Gym Kitchen. But you've clearly been through some stuff as well, right? Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so I guess, first of all, I can probably talk about like the diversity thing, right? So
yeah.
Until George Floyd died, I didn't really understand, you know, the gravitas of it, because I just used to think, I'm black, I've just got to get on with it. So no matter what happens, you kind of just got to get on with it. But some of the examples, I shared this at the Tesco conference the other day because they invited me to speak. And some of the examples are things like where I would turn up to retail head offices with samples in my hands, and I'd be mistaken for the delivery driver.
What?
You know, they would go, actually, and would have like a good 15-minute argument about, actually, I'm here to see somebody, to with have an actual meeting with the people at the front desk. I'm here to have a meeting with someone. And they'll go, no, 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 we don't take samples here. They have to go be delivered round the back. And you go, wow, that must mean that there's nobody that looks like me that comes to have meetings with actual buyers.
Yeah,
you know, I'm even saying buyers' names, etc.
Yeah.
And you go, but I used to go through that and just think, okay, maybe I've got to be the first one to do this before, you know, I can actually, before anybody else has to come and do the next thing as well. And then there was another example where when I was at Coty, right, I was given a company car, which was an Audi A5. That's a really nice car. Sales director didn't want it, typical. So he managed to get himself a really much nicer car. And I was on the way to a meeting to Lloyd's Pharmacy. And unfortunately, I was stopped by the police because I'm a black dude in a nice car. But the whole kind of ethos of the story is the fact that I was late to the meeting, but I could not tell my boss why I was late.
Oh, God.
And that was simply because of the fact that I felt that the repercussions were going to fall on me,
yeah,
as opposed to them going, oh, okay, this is something that just happens. And I was talking to somebody about it the other day and they were like, wow, in my like 30 years of driving, I've not been stopped once.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. I used to get stopped like at least like once every couple of weeks, once a month, even driving a, you know, Vauxhall Corsa.
Yeah.
But these are the stories that nobody really sees or understands.
Yeah.
They just think, you know, you're just another person in FMCG that's kind of just cracking on.
Yeah.
But these things have a real toll on you. And I remember going to that meeting and I was down and I was like, oh, I'm never late to meet it. Like everybody knows I'm like, I love to be early.
Yeah.
So I'm never late to meeting. So my boss is like, what's actually going on? And I just had to tell him a bit of a story in that, you know, it just took a bit longer, you know, there's traffic on the road, etc. But, and that's why I do believe that diversity of thought, of doing is really, really important, because then if I'd felt like I was in a position to actually communicate that, then actually someone would have gone, do you know what, actually, we've probably got to do something about this in some sense, some way, shape or form.
Yeah.
So there are many, many challenges that are faced. And, you know, you even just think about the business ones, of course, which are even more relatable to everybody in terms of the mental health and the toll that it takes on you to actually run a company.
Yeah.
This thing is 24/7.
Yeah.
You know what? I used to go on, I want to say, 3 or 4 holidays a year and actually switch off and chill when I was in, you know, kind of big business, because someone's covering your role. Yeah, someone's there doing the rest of it.
Yeah.
Now, if I go away, I still do not get touched. Someone is still phoning me.
Yeah.
I'm still looking at emails, you know. My missus is like, take some time off, you know, relax. And I'm just like, you can't, because you really feel like if you take time off, your competitors aren't taking time off. So it's almost like a game of who's going to win.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's also a game of who's going to burn out first.
Yeah, yeah.
And that isn't great. So I've been trying to find almost like a bit of balance, but it really is tough.
What's helped in that?
So in that is sport. Yeah. So I love playing different sports. So like tennis and football, but also going to the gym. And I use that as my time to switch off. So I almost like to put my phone on like this do not disturb thing, where obviously no emails, no anything comes up when I'm obviously in the gym or with football, you know, you're kind of like taken away from the thing. But you know what? Like a lot of people have been saying, you know, go and speak to counselors and go and do X, work, meditate and all of those kind of things. And I just don't really want to do any of that. Do you know what I mean? I want to, I feel like my release is playing sport. It's that teamwork. You know, I've got that teamwork football kind of outlet, then I've got the individual one, which is a bit of tennis you know, you need to focus and refocus the mind, and then there's a gym, you know, which you just use to keep on getting healthier and healthier and almost like achieve those goals. So it's almost like business in a sense, but in sport, which takes your mind off of things.
I love it, man, and I love that you have addressed the fact that like you're not going to go, some things just aren't going to work for you, right? And that's what's amazing about mental, and I actually saw something on Diary of a CEO, Stephen Bartlett's podcast, where he's interviewing Simon Sinek, and he talks about mental health in John Stapleton showed it the other day, and he talks about mental wellness rather than mental health. And it's such an interesting way, because every single person is going to be different. Like, it's not and mental health is, or mental wellness is if you break your arm and you go to the doctor, they put it in a cast.
Yeah.
Everyone is going to get the same cast.
Exactly.
You can't treat mental 100%. Wellness that way. And it's such a, like, I'm the same. I mean, I play tennis quite a lot, and I absolutely love that moment where you like, I put my phone in my tennis bag, that's it for an hour and a half.
Exactly.
Even if you wanted to get hold
even
of it.
Even if this is it, yeah, right. And I even switch it off from the watch as well, because sometimes the watch as you do.
I had to get rid of a watch,
trying to keep you connected.
I had to get rid of a watch.
I'm tempted, but because it counts the calories, I'll keep it going.
I'm trying to smash those targets.
Yeah, exactly. But do you know what? It's the exact same thing. You switch off for that time, and it's just you versus someone else in a zone doing something that is not an email from a buyer asking where's my stock, or a manufacturer saying something has gone wrong. It's just you time.
And that's what I enjoy. So it's amazing, isn't it? Like I've just had a little one. Well, I haven't. My wife's just had a little one. and it's amazing how meditative. Is that the right word? Meditation? Like when I'm with her now, like she's only 16 weeks old. So like she's at a stage of her life where like I physically can't do anything else with holding her. And that's really nice, because I know that I don't want to do anything else and I want to spend quality time with her, but I know I will.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually when you physically can't, because the second you get your phone out, she starts crying.
Yeah.
Or she'll start looking at the phone, man. And I'm like, fuck, I don't want that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly.
And it, like it's
weird.
Because
then I'm assuming then they would associate phone with, you know, chill.
Yeah,
time,
I don't.
Right?
I don't even know. I just don't.
That's how they're growing up. But remember, we grew up in a. I don't know how old you are, but I grew up without. We've had the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
We used to ride our bikes and try and look for our friends.
Yeah.
There was no like, you know, we're gonna send a WhatsApp note, you know, kind of live link notification
to show you
where
mad,
we are.
Isn't it?
We were just out there with no phones or anything. Then we had the Nokia 3210 with Snake on
Samsung flip one.
Yeah, the flip one, etc. And all
I
that kind
my
of stuff.
I think that my first ringtone was like a Fly on the Wings of Love. And
brilliant.
It was like a one like little doo doo doo.
Yeah, I actually can't even remember mental, what mine was. Mental. But yeah, but that's why there's such a difference between obviously us and the future. But it's almost like the future, you know, Gen Z and whoever comes up next. But it's almost like, how do we coach them on the way to actually take time away from your
phones, technology.
From everything.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you just become, you know, just become like a leftover
thing,
right?
Oh, there's like, I could literally talk about this for hours. I really hope society shifts the other way.
Yeah.
And starts pushing back. And the same with like schooling. I'm going to go off on a tangent, so I'll pull it back. But the schooling and like, we were looking into like nurseries the other day, and like Montessori is this like, a way of teaching kids where you basically like you put them in a room and then there's like stations around the outside and they can like gravitate towards whatever they want to do. So if someone's playing a teacher, but if they're playing like a tambourine and the kid likes the music, the kid goes over there and they're not told that they shouldn't go over there.
Someone's baking
a cake, like they're like, and they're interested in that, they just go over and do it. And
interesting.
And we went in to have a look at it and like it's amazing. So I was like, oh, does this really work? What's it actually like? And you see them, and the teachers in there are actually like, come on then, here we go, you're okay, off you go. And I was like, that breeds into everything from like trying to get kids to learn exactly the same way as if everything was the same. Like everyone's individual, right? I guess
this is it.
The long-winded way of
coming back
to it is like that individuality. And
exactly.
Okay, I want to come to, so we're the mental health piece, the switching off piece is there. I want to come back to the diversity piece. Those are examples of when you're working for someone else. Have you ever struggled setting up a bit? Did the business have a toll on that?
What do you mean? So in terms of like diversity within business?
Yeah.
So yeah, of course. One of the things that, or the biggest challenges for, you know, kind of black entrepreneurs is the fact that we don't get VC funding. I think it's less than 1% of VC funding goes to black founders.
Wow.
Which is crazy.
Fucking hell, I didn't realize.
Mental, yeah. So particularly when, you know, you look at the population, et cetera.
Yeah.
And I remember a perfect example of this where obviously I trademarked the brand in 2016 and then 2018 was going round. I was going, do you know what? Maybe I should like raise a lot of money, you know, before going to do this and trying to find external investors. But instead of the investors saying, oh, actually, or giving me like good recommendations, they were telling me to quit.
What?
Before I'd even started, they were like, nah, don't do it. Chilled, frozen, not too sure on your brand. Maybe it's not the right way to go. So 1%, less than 1% of people getting VC funding. How are you telling black founders to quit their dreams?
Yeah.
It's terrible, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it is.
And for me, it's even if you know you didn't think it was a great idea or whatnot, then that's fine. But for to have like three or four of them say a similar thing, it was kind of like, wow, crazy. And imagine I hadn't just kept on going. And that was almost like the defiant person within me to just keep on cracking on and, you know, just going, I've got nothing to lose here. Mm. Let me give it a go.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh man, it's hard enough without that extra element, right?
Yeah, this is it, right? You're doing everything you can. So at the time I'm working full time as well. I'm going around talking to investors, trying to figure out, you know, okay, how am I going to do this? And that's why, you know, meeting my business partner who is the black farmer.
Yeah.
He's obviously a black guy who understood me and had been on that same journey.
Yeah.
So I went on that journey, it's hard. It's draining. It's crazy. You haven't got a listing yet, but you're like, you know, I want to give it a go. There are stats where almost like a lot of non-black individuals have family and friends rounds, but obviously my family's first generation. They don't just have money in the bank to be able to pass on to people like that. And that's another challenge for many black founders in obviously the generation after that. Hopefully, you know, we've made a bit of money and we can actually give our kids some money to go and crack on with a business. But that just doesn't exist in that own right. You know, some of them don't even own houses, let alone have money to pass on. Well, some do. And obviously there are a lot that do very well. And then the other thing, I guess, is whenever a black founder or a black entrepreneur wants to create a brand or create a proposition, most VCs or big businesses that would just invest, they tell you, oh, actually, we'll create an incubator.
Yeah.
And we will upskill you. You know, we'll kind of teach you.
Yeah.
It's crazy, isn't it? Because they don't believe that you have the skills to do that. I'm telling you, go and look at the, like, there are so many that, and I think some of them are doing it, trying to do a good job in it, but it's almost like, okay, you won't give me money, but you'll teach me the stuff I learned at uni.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much for that. And we should be grateful.
But
all we want is a level playing field. That's literally it. I work really hard. I know I work really hard and I'm willing to work even harder. But the stat that, you know, a lot of people say is you've got to work three times harder than your colleague or your counterpart just to achieve the same thing that they've achieved.
Yeah.
Isn't fair.
And I guess, I mean, that I'd never thought about it like that, just in that, like, of course it's just the level playing field. It's like there's new schemes from Sainsbury's that have just launched where they're only taking black founded businesses, right?
Yeah.
And I think that there's an element where you go, is this coming from the place where it should be coming from?
Yeah. And I guess I don't know where it's coming from, and that's the thing, right?
Yeah.
But I am happy to actually start to see that stuff because without that stuff, the playing field never is going to be leveled.
Of course.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, mate, 100%.
So once again, you know, so with all of those challenges that I talk about, you know, so it's an accelerator scheme. It's no VC funding. Imagine, you know, a small brand that could do very, very well not having a foot in the door.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't even go and start to reach out to buyers because you don't have money to put a product together.
Yeah.
You don't have a manufacturer that wants to work with you. You don't have anything.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? So I'm actually happy that people Sainsbury's do that.
Great.
But also people like Tesco, you know, that Tesco have got a black action plan as well, where they're
it's
like,
amazing.
We're going to help support black owned businesses. And I think it should stem and work for a lot of other diverse areas, of course, as well.
But
it's taken time to do it. And you look at the diverse population of everybody, you know, I think there was a stat that said, I think it's 30% of the population, maybe by 2030, maybe a bit less, probably BAME.
Yeah.
There's so much more work to do.
Customers changing.
The mindset's changing.
Everything
needs to change and kind of follow 100%. Up and catch up.
I think it's amazing to see the progress that's been made in our generation alone. Right?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
We had Sam McAnally on the podcast.
I know Sam
and
really well, man.
He's like such a dude.
And great.
A really inspirational guy. And I love what they're doing because he does it in such a refreshing way that is genuine. And
100%.
I think it's amazing.
And what he needs is more support from the different retailers, from the manufacturers, to be able to fund what he's doing, because it's a charity.
Charities
need money to keep on going.
100%.
He's got people that he needs to pay to be able to crack on and pay their bills and do stuff. He doesn't take any money from it.
He obviously works
innocent. So it's like...
And he's got a pretty high pressure job.
Exactly. he's a busy man. He's a very, very busy man. But do you know what I mean? It's like, it's taking, instead of the industry just to go, actually, there's an issue, let's all get together. It's taking one black guy to try and have to change. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And have to go around and knock on everybody's door to try and go, how can we help do this? So the more of us that try and do that, obviously the better.
Hi all, just quickly, I want to introduce you to my friends at Spring and Tonic PR, who are also this series podcast sponsors. They are my own trusted PR partners for the Savorists. What I love about Spring and Tonic is it's run by two wonderful ladies, Emily and Jess. They're a small but mighty team. It is just the two of them, and thanks to years in the industry, they completely understand the startup, scale-up food and drink space and how to get meaningful cut-through in consumer and trade media. Having worked with some of the most successful and exciting names in food and drink, they really are an industry go-to. So if you're looking to make tangible difference to your business, build your brand equity through PR, I honestly would look no further. Get in touch with them at Spring and Tonic PR to find out more. Ta!
There's definitely stuff that we as a black community need to do as well. So we can't put the blame on everybody else. You know, we've kind of like got to actually learn to create propositions that are mainstream. Not just focused on the world food output potentially. You know that.
I see what you mean.
You look at the different retailers. So the Gym Kitchen has never been a. You know, I still remember rocking up to one of the retailers and I'm like, "Are you going to sell me jerk chicken?" And I was like, "No, this is a mainstream proposition for everybody and anybody."
Yeah.
And once again, I talk about diversity because nobody was able to create what I'd created. And I'm sure they probably could have, but no one was able to because I saw the need for it. I had the passion for it.
Yeah.
And I was willing to drive that. And that's what diversity brings, because everybody's different, right?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people talk about the flavor of our meal. And that's because I come from a Nigerian household where flavor is everything. You know, you don't have bland food. You don't have food that's dry. You know, and that's what people were complaining about in some of the other products that they were having. And you shouldn't have to have that. Food's emotional. You should fall in love with food. And that's where I think that the whole diverse piece comes into, not just, you know, it's a black person, but actually it's diversity in thought. And one of the sayings that I like to say is great minds think differently, where it's obviously a lot of people say great minds think alike.
Yeah.
Put different people in a room, they'll come up with different opinions. 100%. And that will spark a different mindset to drive something that's going to be different.
Oh man, 100%. And I think it's really refreshing. And I think that there's something that we were talking about before we hit record as well, is like, we've recorded a few of these episodes back to back, and every founder's journey is different.
100%.
And it's amazing when, like, on a macro level, when you go like, oh yeah, we've got a podcast and we speak to founders about running a business, you'd probably think, well, there's a cookie cutter, and there fucking isn't. That, like, there's the everyone is different, and I think that's what makes this industry so amazing, and the kind of have the guts to get out there and go and do it. And I think it's wonderful. So I want to come back to the brand, and I want to come back to, like, when you find this manufacturer, and the manufacturer goes like, oh yeah, the only way I'm gonna make anything for you is if you get a major retailer.
Yeah.
What goes through your head then?
Do you know what, actually? What goes through my head then is, I know, I've been around the industry, so I kind of knew that was going to be the case if I was going to this manufacturer that does own label for, you know, quite a lot of the retailers. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? But the thing is, obviously, what's going through my head is, okay, I've now got to wait for retailer ranging windows before someone's going to say yes. So I'm like, okay, missed January. Okay, all right, now, so we're working towards September. Okay, they've said no, so I've missed September. So now we're working towards January again. So it starts to get draining. And think something I don't think I mentioned was, whilst I was, I think this was about in 2018, 2019-ish, I quit my job to start consulting so that I could work 3 days a week whilst doing the business 2 days a week. And obviously those 2 days a week were unpaid because no one's earning anything. Do you know what I mean? So I was earning less than I would earn, like, you know, kind of a few years before that kind of thing. So you're like rationing, you're kind of, but it's something you believe in, right?
Yeah.
So every time we miss those range reviews, I'm like, oh, I really hope this is going to happen, because otherwise I've literally just lost out on earning, you know, a good salary to earn like half what I could have earned by just, you know, continuing to push. But yeah, I'm glad that I just kept on pushing. And for me, you know, in the back of my mind was like, people were saying, oh, do you want to quit? Do you want to give up? But I was like, no, because I could still see that there was nothing like what I was trying to launch out there. So it was just a matter of time before somebody said yes.
Mm. Amazing. Amazing, man. And I think that, like, there's so much in there, and I want to unpick the sort of where that drive and passion comes from. Mm. But I think for listeners, one of the most tangible things, and obviously we do have some buyers that listen to this podcast, but a lot of the... A lot of our listeners are aspiring entrepreneurs or people who have recently set up food businesses. And the key thing that keeps coming back to is, if you want a brand going into retail, you have to obviously work around retail range reviews.
Yeah.
And I say obviously, you say obviously, because we were in the...
Because we know it. Yeah, yeah, true.
But like, just talk through what that, like, for someone that doesn't understand what that range review looks like, talk through that.
Yeah, yeah. So a ranging window is basically when the buyers or the store staff can change things in store. So when new products come in and when old products are delisted, so that they're removed. So what would happen is they would work, say, 6 months out. You know, you'd go to them and you'd say, so I'm going to use one of my new products, for example. I'll go to them and say, I've got a new pouch that I want to launch into Asda. This will be in January. And they'll be like, okay, we are locking down our window. This is the amount of stores. These are the stores where they're going. So then you work, because they work 6 months out, you need that yes in January, so that then you can plan your production runs and plan everything, you know, artwork, packaging, forecasting, etc., to then hit that July date when it all lands in store.
Yeah.
So a lot of people just think they can change, you know, retailers can just change things tomorrow.
Yeah.
But I always give the example of, imagine every brand was trying to launch something and they could just put it in whenever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The store staff would never, you know, they wouldn't work. So they've got this thing called store hours.
Yeah.
And the store hours are when the store staff are programmed to change the planogram on that day. And the planogram is basically almost like a bit of a map as to where everything sits on shelf. So gym kitchen here, own label here, something else here.
Yeah.
And that's the whole process of launching a product. So it works really far out. So once again, in January, they're making a decision for July. So in January, you miss that. They say no.
Yeah.
The range review isn't to July.
Yeah.
So that range review launches. They then want to review what's actually happened and what's been successful.
Yeah.
That will take about 4 months for them to actually see what the sales are going to be like.
Yeah.
And then you're now going back to pitch again, probably missing that January window because they're still reviewing sales of the products they've just put in and then going again.
Yeah.
So that's why when you miss a range review, it's like, well, when are you going to launch? And that's and that's why sometimes it's really, depending on your product proposition and whether you've got the opportunity to launch into food service or elsewhere, that's where it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Because then you can go at it quickly, you know, even though some of them still do work to range reviews in terms of the biggest food service wholesalers.
Yeah,
it's a different time, it's a different ball game.
Yeah.
You've got coffee shops which can change their products at any point in time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But when you choose to go to big retail, you have to adhere to all of their restrictions and stuff.
And I think the biggest advice there would be get to know when those range reviews for retail are, right?
Exactly.
It's very unlikely. I mean, the chance of them responding, who knows? But it's very unlikely that you're going to get a buyer that's shitty with you if you just ask them. If you say, like, I've got this idea, I'm trying to plan when I should pitch some MPD to you, can you talk me through when your range reviews
are? 100%. And you know what? That is the exact attitude to go with.
Yeah.
You get buyers are so busy. You know, one of the buyers showed me her inbox the other day, and it was like 1,000 emails or something like that.
Yeah.
Because there's like so many people that's like, hey, can you launch my brand? Hey, can you launch my brand?
Yeah, yeah.
So anything that you can do to make their life easier and just treat them like a bit of like a human being and just be like, because they are human at the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah.
That helps them.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to make them want to respond back to you, which is what I have found anyway, respond back to you as opposed to kind of ignoring it.
That's it. People buy from people ultimately.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And it's that human element. We had a meeting with a lovely lady at EasyJet who launched Crunchits on EasyJet last year. And a bit of a plug there. If you're flying on EasyJet this summer, make sure you grab something. No, joking.
Brilliant.
I'm not joking. And I was talking to her, and when we first wanted a listing at EasyJet, I was like, I look back at some of my messages now, man, and I'm so embarrassed about like I think I messaged her on like fucking Boxing Day, thinking that like
really
maybe she would like be like maybe that
just
was
not be with her family.
Was, like, downtime. I was like, oh, maybe that's a downtime where she doesn't get emails, and then I was like, yeah, but and now I look back and I'm like, it's just embarrassing because it's like not everyone cares as much as you do about the product, and I tell you now, the buyer at Tesco's does not.
Yeah,
exactly. And it's going back to being human, right?
That's it. And no one is going to be as passionate about your product as you are.
Yeah.
But obviously, there's a way to kind of get that meeting in terms of like how you're pitching and propositioning yourself. And it's almost like, I always say, it's almost like we want to help you drive sales.
Yeah.
And how can we do that together?
Yeah.
That's always.
Well, it comes back to what you said earlier, which I loved, which was like, it's a collaborative.
Yeah, approach. Exactly.
You're like, you've because of the relationships that you've now built, you've launched products based on him telling you that there's a gap here or there's an entrance there,
exactly,
et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly.
Amazing, man. And are you enjoying the journey?
Yeah. Do you know what? It's a crazy one. There are times where, you know, it's not enjoyable, but part of the thing that I love is being able to launch new products, but also being able to hear from our customers in terms of how we're actually changing their lives and how we're actually making them live, breathe healthier. You know, I spoke to a mum the other day and she was just like, thank you so much for just saving me so much time. Or, I can't cook, you know, I've got kids to look after, busy trying to juggle work, etc. That's the kind of thing that gives me a buzz. So yeah, really enjoying it. But obviously, like anything, there are extremely challenging times. We're in the craziest market ever. So I always say to a lot of people that I wish I'd launched this brand like 10 years ago or something like that and just had a really good coast.
Oh, man, yeah.
So like we launched in January 2020, we had COVID. Now we've got inflation, cost of living crisis.
Yeah.
I'm just like, okay, maybe in 2 years time, there'll be like a nice smooth sell.
But oh, yeah.
You just, at the minute, you're just like, okay, we'll take every day as it comes.
Yeah.
And whatever kind of throws itself at you kind of thing.
I completely agree. We launched December 2019 and same shit. And you look back and you go like, there's some amazing challenger brands that are now broken through.
Yeah.
And they're not in that challenger world. But you're like, fuck me, I wish I launched at the same time as you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, do you know what? If I'd launched this at the same time as Grenade, they would, you know, just be like, fantastic.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
And obviously they still had hard times, right?
But yeah, of course. Exactly.
But they're like, at least the macroeconomic climate.
Climate was different,
shit.
Right? Yeah. Like, yeah. And also, I was saying this to someone the other day, they were like, oh yeah, but do you remember that small thing called Brexit? I was like, okay, yeah, we missed that one.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're kind of skip that a little bit.
Yeah, fair.
But yeah.
I think there's a really interesting, I love having founders on who have had prior experience in FMCG. Do you think that's helped?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. So I think a lot of advice that I would give to individuals is you've got to come into this industry with your eyes wide open. Do you know what I mean?
Like
people think that, oh, why is the buyer not responding to me? You know, but that's what we were used to, you know, because I've been in the industry and I've done that before, you know, almost like how to pitch to a retailer and what to say and what not to say. Once again, I've heard some horror stories of people just shouting at buyers saying, why the heck are you not taking my products? What's going on? But when you come from like a tech or something different where that's almost the norm, that's what you expect in a new industry. And you start to almost get, you get a lot of investment bankers actually try and come into FMCG is
They've
what I started to realize. They got the big bonus, you know, they're like, there's a lovely drink that I want to launch now. Put all of their money into that. But then just don't understand why it doesn't move as fast and as quick. So it's called fast moving consumer goods, but actually some things work quite slowly.
Yeah.
Really. So the products sell quite fast on shelves, but
the
in terms of like
move fast.
This is it. In terms of like move behind the scenes and the background as to getting your products the thing, it's actually a slow process.
Oh man, 100%.
And yeah, I just say it like, you know, having that classic training. And one of the things that I always think about and love is the fact that I got to learn on someone else's money.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And
yeah.
Particularly, you know, when you're thinking of campaigns and of marketing and of things to do, you know, I've been in the room with, you know, where you can spend millions of pounds on joint business plans at like some beauty companies to, you know, being in your own business where every penny has to work for itself because it's that tiny in terms of margins, et cetera, and all that kind of thing, really. So it's good to learn there so that you don't bring that into your business and then kind of screw stuff up and go bankrupt straight away.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Crazy.
So I do think that, yeah, it does help, but it's not to say that you don't have to have, you have to have FMCG experience.
No.
I've seen some founders do amazing things, you know. I think I was listening to a podcast the other day. Who was it? Perfect Ted, I think.
On Brand Growth Heroes.
On Brand Growth Heroes, that's right. And I don't think they had FMCG experience. They didn't know what they're doing. Made a lot of mistakes, but are doing well now, which is great.
Yeah, those guys are killing it. I love it. Yeah. I love to see it. And Teddy's an absolute legend.
Yeah, you've got to get him on here next.
Actually. Yeah, well, he's been on... we did a live... Sorry, man. That's
all right.
We did a live recording where we raised some money for Movember last year, and Teddy was on the panel with Josh White from Cano Water.
Okay, yeah.
And Harry Corrin, who has set up a mental health training business, which is amazing. So, yeah, but I'd love to get the dudes back on actually, because I love it actually. I love how they just bowl around in their green tracks.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Brilliant, isn't it? Yeah. Should get a gym kitchen one, really.
That's it. The there's such an argument for a debate for, like, a lot of people go, the naivety of not having any experience is what got them there, but then the experience is being able to know how to get there. Like, it's a funny one, isn't it? Like I my first job was working at Causden Press.
Okay, all right.
My first day I was given a rucksack and a load of cans. It was when they launched their, like, rhubarb can.
Yeah. I love that one, by the way.
Oh, it's so nice, isn't it?
So good, so good.
And my boss literally gave me a rucksack full of cans and was like, off you go. And my job was to, like, it was field sales. It's just like, walk the streets and sell in. And now I look back and I'm like, I'm so grateful that my career started like that, because you just learn that sort of, like, the way that an old mentor, an old guy at Causden Press who sadly passed away, he was one of the founding directors at Causden Press. He used to say that our game is moving boxes profitably. And I was, obviously there's so much more to it, but you never understand that more than just doing field sales. And, like, almost sort of, there were times when we launched into Booker and we'd go to Booker, buy like 50 cases from Booker, and then go and sell that to independents to try and drive trial.
To try and drive through Booker. Yeah, got you.
But you'd never know. And, like, now we're starting to build out the team, and Chloe, who's sat here today, she's done some time out on field sales. Everyone that we bring in now through the business, doesn't matter what they end up doing, I want them to do that field sales. It's that grassroots, like,
that's it.
Bit of training that you really get to see someone's reaction to what it is that you're selling.
100%. And I think when you're in big corporates, most of the grads start in field sales as well. Because they want you out talking to people. They want you out being rejected. They want you out, you know, really, really going, what the heck is this? Have you got the nerve to keep on doing it? Because as you go up, despite you not being outside knocking on doors, you are still trying to knock on doors to try and get things away. And it's just a more long-winded process as opposed to someone saying yes there and then, or get out of my shop. Yes now or a no later on kind of thing.
Oh man, we had some, like, outrageous times. And we've had Mark Palmer on the podcast before, who's one of the founding directors of Causden as well. But he's become quite a good friend, and I know he won't mind me saying this, but, like, I was physically thrown out of a convenience store because they wouldn't pay for the case, and we had, like, obviously daily targets.
Yeah, of course.
Targets, and they didn't want to. They just wanted half a case, and I was like, all right, I'll give you the half case if you I'll swap it for a packet of cigarettes. And he was like, get out. And it was such a, like, I don't know what I thought.
A bit of negotiating.
But it ended so badly.
Of course,
I was thrown out. But it's a really interesting kind of learning curve that people go. And we talk a little bit about that rejection and about the kind of, like, the getting comfortable with people saying no, essentially. Let's say we've got a listener who has just started a business or is just about to start a business, keeps trying, keeps getting rejected, that we've all been there. We know, like, I sit here and I say, like, you've got to be okay with saying no, it still feels painful every time you get a no, right?
100%.
What biggest bit of advice?
Yeah, so the biggest bit of advice is, if you're getting no, is understand what the no is.
Yeah.
Because then you can shape your proposition to make it a yes. So I remember the first no that I got, I can't remember what retailer it was from, but they were like, the proposition you bought me doesn't really make sense. So what we had was a just add good carbs. So we had almost like the meat base, and then customers would just choose what carbs go with it.
Okay, yeah.
And they were like, oh, this doesn't make sense. You know, it's going to be confusing in store, etc. So I was like, okay, fine. We'll create you a full meal then. So then went off, changed the proposition, came back with a full meal. Then got a no into, and I found out that no was because they just didn't have the space to play with.
Yeah.
So then it was about, okay, now how do we find some data or something like that to say that actually this isn't performing to the levels that this is, or how do we get some customer reviews outside stores to say customers aren't happy with the almost the selections that they've got currently. How can we get them to change their mind? So by doing that and understanding what the no is, that allowed you to shape it and change it and go that way. That's the biggest piece of advice I would definitely say for the no's. Because it's easy for everybody to say, oh, just keep going. But if you don't understand why they've said no, then what's the point in just keep going? Do you know what I mean? Because they're never going to say yes, really.
Yeah.
But say, what is it? What's wrong with the proposition? Do you not like the taste?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that you have to change everything completely for them.
Of course.
But as long as you understand it, then you'll be able to quantify that actually this is just a buyer's preference or actually it's just maybe it's not going to work in the market completely.
Yeah.
And you bring the two together. I think
especially when it's like a retail buyer.
Yeah.
And you look at the market and you're like, there's 5-6 of these.
Exactly.
Like if one's saying that it's probably like, listen.
100%. Yeah. And one of the things that I know about us is we get so passionate. We get so in love with our product that we're like, this is the best thing since sliced bread. Nobody else can create anything different. But sometimes we actually have to step back and go, okay, there is actually something that's really similar to this. Or actually, this ingredient isn't enough of a USP to launch in here.
Yeah.
How can we make it actually a bit better? How can we do it a little bit different?
Yeah.
How can we actually create a proposition where it's genuinely unique?
Yeah.
And how can we bring the buyer on the journey to actually get to that as well? Because if they're on the journey as well with you, because buyers love giving you feedback. They love helping small brands. Yeah. They love that. I can tell you from personal experience, they love it.
Yeah.
And we're in a place now with some of our retailers where I go to them and I'm like, okay, where are your gaps? What do you need?
Yeah.
We can go and help create it together.
Well, you're going to speak at Tesco conferences.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So that's the thing. And it's showing, once again, it's that collaborative approach to, okay, I've been told no, but if I can help you, if you can help me shape it, let's shape it together.
Yeah.
Because then if you get it to exactly what they want to get it to, then, and they're still telling you no, then obviously it's more of a technical no in terms of they just don't have the space, or they're cutting range, or they're doing that. But your proposition will be in a lot better place than where it was in the beginning.
Yeah. I love that. And there's so much to unpick there, because I think there's so many learnings that get in touch with these buyers early doors, take them on your journey, because they goes back to being human. People 100%. Will come on board that journey with you, and I'm guessing you've sent samples in before it's even in packaging, right?
Yeah, 100%. Before it's even in branding. So you know, you print out the branding, stick it in like a little box with the product not in the packaging, and you end up getting to a place where buyers actually trust your judgment.
Quick one, I really want to talk to you about Bread and Jam. It's the UK's biggest community of food and drink founders and proud supporters of the Untold podcast. They run workshops, talks, network events and conferences that support emerging and scaling food and drink FMCG brands. Their main event, the jewel in their crown, is the Bread and Jam Festival in London each July. It's 2 days of jam-packed peer-to-peer knowledge, sharing where you can, learning from industry icons, meeting retailers, face-to-face pitching sessions, finding industry experts who can take your business to the next level, and the network till you drop. I have been the last few years and I honestly cannot tell you how wonderful this event is. It oozes positivity. The energy in there is electric and I've met some wonderful people there. I've had the privilege of sharing and chairing a couple of sessions there and the whole thing is honestly unbelievable value for the cost of the ticket. Head over to their website, Bread and Jam, and I really hope I'll see you there. We are hosting an Untold live podcast from Bread and Jam this summer at the festival. So do come along and see us. And I really, really hope you guys sign up because I honestly cannot explain how wonderful the event is. Cheers, guys. I guess it's putting yourself in their shoes as well. Like, what is it that they're trying to achieve from their category? What is 100%. It that they're trying to, like, they've got a boss who's got a boss who's got a boss. They're going to get a bonus. Their boss is going to get a bonus.
Yeah.
And can you sit in that agenda and work with them on that?
And yeah. And that's one of the things that I learned on. We did this thing called gap negotiation, like, back in the day. And it's like a negotiation course, which all of the big corporates and all the big FMCGs do it. They send you away for like a few days. And part of that gap negotiation was, it was all about like, what does the buyer need? You know, what's their thinking? Are they trying to get promoted? Are they just new into the role? Are they just kind of almost like just here, but not enjoying it? Because once you can understand that, you can start to understand them a little bit more in terms of what, where do we sit in trying to make your life easier?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
If you're just new in, the last thing you're going to do is change everything.
Yeah.
You're going to want to go, okay, I've seen that this works, that works. You know, if you're trying to get promoted, you want to make a difference. You want to stand out, stand for something. You want to be like, actually, do you know what? Let's do this POS in store because I want, you know, the CEO to go, wow, who did that?
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's how you help them on that journey to achieve their goals as well as you achieving your goals.
Yeah,
I want to launch my brand. Because most people want to launch their brand because they want to tap into customers and audience, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you wanted to make money, then you'd be in tech and you'd be an investment banker.
Yeah.
Hopefully money comes with it at some point. But it's more about the need and the challenge that you didn't have something that was catering to you. That's why most people I know have started a brand.
Yeah.
Once you've got that bit sorted, then they almost like resonate with that. And then you kind of then do the goal matching thing. And then, you're kind of onto something.
Yeah, man. I love it. Look, I could sit here and talk to you all day, but I'm conscious of your time. What's next for the Gym Kitchen as we start to wrap up? Talk us through what comes next.
Yeah, so we're in four different categories at the minute. So we've got frozen meals, we've got frozen pizzas, chilled ready meals, and some ambient grains pouches. Obviously, there's a distribution a bit that we want to do. You know, we're not in the likes of Sainsbury's.
Yeah.
We're still, our pouches aren't in all the retailers. Same with our frozen line. So we've got four different categories, but not in all the retailers, if you see what I mean. So there'll be an opportunity to try and hopefully push to get those in. But also, we just want to be like that lifestyle brand that somebody can just say, I live and breathe the Gym Kitchen, and that's the brand I go to. So in order to do that, we want to tap into different areas, you know, whether it's desserts, whether it's drinks on the go, whether it's snacking. And not saying that we're going to go into all of those, because we actually look at categories and go, okay, there's a gap there. There isn't a gap in all of those categories, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there might be something that we can do different and something that we can do a little bit better. So for me, it's just about continuing to, like I say, grow the core, but also look at newness, launch newness, and just grow that, just give that customer what they want, you know, and that's great tasting, healthy products that are accessible, affordable, and just reliable, really, in that whole journey of you trying to be a better version of you.
Yeah.
D2C, we might look at D2C at some point. It's a bit challenging because of obviously chilled and frozen.
Yeah,
and,
man, that must be.
You know, I look at the likes of Mindful Chef and HelloFresh and those guys and go, well done.
You're smashing it
from that perspective. But yeah, every time we look at it, it's a little bit challenging, but we'll see, and we'll see what our plans are there. But yeah, for me, it's just keep enjoying the journey, keep on growing it, keep on keeping the buyers happy, and working closely with our retail partners, working with our manufacturing partners who are all great. Just cracking on with that, really.
Man, it's wicked. And I think thank you for coming on, because it's been like super inspirational, and the way that you speak so eloquently about the business, but also your journey and everything
you,
is amazing, man. So it's been an absolute pleasure. I want to something that we're doing with everyone that's come on the podcast this series is I'm running a dinner party. We're going to have some delicious gym kitchen food. Disclaimer, every other food brand that sat there, I have said, we're going to have some delicious White Rabbit food. We're going to have some delicious salad. We're not all eating gym kitchen food.
Brilliant.
But for this dinner party, we're having gym kitchen food. Every other guest that's come on so far we've had five other guests. They've all bought a guest, can be anyone in the world, to my house where we're hosting a dinner party. And they've bought guests and they've told me why they've bought that guest. So far, we've got Gary Neville. We've got Phil Knight,
all right,
founder of Nike. Yeah. We've got Elon Musk. We've got Derek Sarno. And we've got Brian Cox, Space Brian Cox.
Yep.
Who are you bringing?
We're bringing Jay-Z.
Oh, that was so quick off the tongue.
Yeah,
love it.
Jay-Z.
Love it.
And the reason why is just because he's just got a great, great mind. You know, obviously, fantastic, amazing rapper. But when you look at the business side of what he's doing as well, it's just entrepreneurship through and through.
Yeah.
He invests in so many different propositions. And, you know, that's definitely.
Man, I love it. We've got a really cool.
I mean, that table's banging.
It is, man. Can you imagine if we could make it real?
Yeah, if we could make that reality. I'm sure there might be a few fights in there, to be honest, as well.
Disclaimer, we're never going to be able to make this reality.
Exactly. Brilliant.
We can dream, right? We can dream.
We can dream. Gary Neville with all of them.
That's it. It'll be jokes. Thank you so much for coming on Untold, man. It's been an absolute pleasure.
No, thank you so much for the invite. And I listened to it as well. So it's so good. It's so cool. And this is the part of the story that, you know, nobody really hears, which is, it's great to share, like a bit of like a therapy session.
That's kind, man. Oh, amazing. Good. That's what we like to hear. Guys at home, thank you so much for lending us your ear. Please do subscribe, download, share it with all your mate's mum's dog. We are on Told Podcast. I'm Harry Turpin, founder of The Savorist, your host. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time. Ta-da. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for giving us your time and listening. I really hope you've enjoyed. If you have enjoyed, please, please, please do download, subscribe, tell your friends' friends, tell your friends' mum's dog. It all really helps us grow the podcast, ultimately bring on more guests, which will be able to get us to give across more tangible takeaways. Thank you so much again. I'm Harry Turpin, your host, founder of The Savorists. We love you lots. Take care. Keep jiggling.